Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're talking about the role of higher education in cannabis, and we are joined by University of Connecticut professor Matthew DeBacco. Matthew, thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And Matthew, tell us about this course that you offer through the University of Connecticut on cannabis cultivation.
Well, this course is an introduction to cannabis horticulture. So it goes over basically from seed to harvest of a cannabis plant. Now, our focus is on an industrial hemp, but we go through, we talk about cloning, and we talk about genetics, we talk about photo periods and different types of lighting, all the way to the point of extraction, where we even have guest lecturers come in from the industry to try to share some of their information on the relative areas of expertise that they have to provide students at a public university information on the emerging cannabis industry.
And how many years have you been doing this, or I guess how many semesters has the course been offered to students?
This course started last spring. So spring of 2019 was the first that it was ever offered in the entire nation, to the best of our records that we can find. And what makes this course unique is that it focuses on the actual growing of the plant, which is something very unique. A lot of people talk about extraction, a lot of people focusing on the chemistry, a lot of people focusing on the cannabinoids. We touch a little bit of everything, but really do focus on the growing, to the point that we actually have a public viewable grow tent that was on display during the semester, where students could come by and view, members of the public can come by and view and see, this on a small scale, of course, but an operation of the progression of a cannabis plant over the course of the semester.
Well, and being that you were either the first or among the first, tell us about what the interest level was like from students. I mean, did you see that this is a topic, a subject matter that students at the university were highly interested in?
So because we were the first one, we had overwhelming student response to the point that we were in scramble mode with the registrar's office at the university, in the sense that we kept upping the size or kept changing lecture halls simply because we reached capacity. We hit 50s within, I think, the first 2 hours. Then we went to a room that had 100, then we had 150, then to 200. Ultimately, we ended up last spring with the largest lecture hall on campus that holds about 410 seats. So we had about 400 try to sign up for the class. And what makes this course unique is it was all majors. It wasn't just plant science majors. It wasn't just pharmacy majors. It wasn't just business majors. It was a whole plethora of majors, indicating the just general interest in the fact that students are trying to get ahead or potential jobs in this industry. This is what made it a little amazing, a little overwhelming at the same point, trying to put a course together in front of up to 400 students.
Well, that is quite the impressive feat, and I admire the heck out of your efforts there. I've got a little story of my own. I worked at the University of Denver from 2011 to 2016 as an adjunct professor teaching in the Colorado Women's College and the University College. And I taught government regulations, and I taught advocacy class, which was basically a lobbying and a policy class. And I did that for a year, year and a half, and I began to introduce cannabis policy and regulation because we were in this hotbed in Colorado of laws and policies coming out. And, dug deep into those issues, and it was really, really exciting. And one of the things that I was most proud of is we took 14 students to Uruguay to study their newly enacted regulations, and that was fantastic on the road. But to your point, developing something new attracts a lot of interest, but it also at times attracts some negativity. I know that I had to deal with some comments that, you know, I just stood tall and acted professional and just was, you know, with pride that was what I'm doing, and I sense a lot of that from you. So what's next? How do you expand this course? How do you take this from here? What are you thinking about?
So this being in the introductory level, we finally got it approved through the Senate system at the university that now has an official course name, official course number, official course description, in the sense that it went through its little trial period because there was some potential hesitation. When you say the word cannabis, people have reactions to it, whether good, bad. They've got their own opinions on it. So we had to go through a vetting process with any course, but with this course, a little higher profile. So now that that one's approved, we have the opportunity of the potential in the future to go to a mid-level or an advanced course. And how I see this potentially progressing is now that we've got the introductory level, all the basics, and open to plant science majors and not plant science majors, anyone who has an interest in the industry, to potentially going through and meeting with farmers and growers and trying to make a more specific course to the actual production, whether it be small or large scale, to give students that have an even greater interest or maybe looking at seriously considering this as a potential career for them, to kind of go through and add in that kind of actual grower's experience. And the reason why that would be a more advanced level is going to be, you know, dealing with situations. You know, you're talking about anyone growing, you know, any crop, outdoors in particular, rainy years, dry years, hot years, cold years. We're here on the East Coast having a very unusual spring here. We're actually have a little bit, and I'm not quite so much out your way, but we have a little bit of snow in the forecast for potential for Saturday, which is highly unlike southern New England here to get any snow in May at all. So dealing with how do you deal with these challenges, that would be kind of where I would be thinking about taking it to the next level. But right now, just trying to get well established with where we are right now.
You know, one of the more exciting things that I learned in interacting with my students was their lack of fundamental knowledge about the distinction between marijuana and hemp. And, you know, frankly, who knew? Who would know the specific legal standard, certainly, but, you know, a lot of people just fundamentally didn't understand that. And when students come in to talk about cannabis and law and regulation and you begin to divide it legally, people begin to see it. And I've had several students that have just been in awe of what you can do with, to your point, the hemp plant, this remarkable plant that is so versatile and that we've known so much about for so long, but we've done very little with due to bad federal policy. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing and an interesting way to look at. What do you think about that?
I think the what I was able to do, again, as you progress the course, you try to make it better as a professor and think about ideas. I tried to incorporate the grow tent a little bit more. So not only do they get to hear and talk about, well, what is cannabis, what is marijuana, what is hemp, what is 420? I even go over, you know, what that is all about. Luckily this year, I started talking about 420 right at 420, which was quite interesting. That's the time point for the course. So I had to talk just to get the timing right. But we talk about some of those things that, you know, they may have heard of, they might, you know, used in common knowledge, but do they really know what it means? Even or what OG means, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So we talk about the real, the cannabis, it's all cannabis, whether it's marijuana or hemp, but now how do we classify that? And how do we work with that? And what does that plant actually look like? Because, you know, for many of these students, they don't get to see or touch the plant. They've seen pictures of it. You know, what is hemp? How is it different than marijuana? How is it similar to marijuana? You know, and there's a whole different legal end, of course, thing. But looking at it from the plant standpoint, what allows us to be able to have these plants? What regulations and paperwork did we have to go through to be able to grow these plants and to show them to the students? We had to file with the Department of Ag, and, you know, square footage and areas and GPS locations. I try to be open and express that with the students, you know. And we took them in the first part of the class. We took them to the grow tent, and I had a cloning tent, and I had a veg tent, so they got to see some different setups that way. So it's just understanding the options that do exist with this plant that is, you know, far-reaching, and I'm just here trying to cover everything, and I know I've got some people in plant science that ask, I call it the more interesting questions, and then I've got some people, some students that, you know, don't have a lot of background, and they're excited to learn that there's male and female plants. And there's a difference in how can they tell the difference? What do we look for? Things like that. So that makes it really interesting to see the students' reaction in that standpoint and then answer the upper level questions with some harder answers, shall we say, that maybe have a little bit of experience or are really looking at seriously pursuing this as a career.
I think it's really cool that you allow all those different majors to come in and, you know, get different perspectives and, you know, spread knowledge. But I want to come back to something that Bob mentioned and see, you know, what your experience is with it, which is, you know, people have so many different conceptions when you hear the word cannabis, so many different associations, sometimes negative associations. So I'm interested when you introduce the idea, the concept of this course to the university, was there a lot of resistance where you met with some people who were like, hey, what the heck? Or was there, was it quite the opposite? And the university was really on board to be a first mover in the academic space for offering a course on cannabis cultivation?
Sure. So while I'm the primary instructor for the class, what really was the motivating factor was Jerry Berkowitz. He does a lot of hemp cannabis research. And he was bringing in all these grad students, looking at bringing in this funding and, you know, doing a lot of the cell signaling end of things, a lot of the laboratory research. But with being a university, and a public university at that, there needs to be that educational component. That educational component for not just advanced level grad students, but for undergrads as well. So this is what kind of started the conversation very early on, in the fact that, hey, we're getting funding, we're doing research on this plant, need to have some sort of public education outreach. After the kind of idea for the course came about. And of course, you say cannabis, and there's going to be people that are just going to be very anti, and there's going to be some people that are going to be very pro-cannabis. So when we went through kind of the process of this, we were very pleased to see overall the support that we had gotten from the upper-level people, the dean, the overall registrar's office, even some of the donors. There's been a lot of support to have this course in the sense that we were already doing the research. We already had some interest coming to the university. We already had some notoriety coming to the industry for that. Now we have the opportunity to offer a course. And that opportunity to offer the education really helped motivate and helped move this course relatively quickly through the system. Of course, with any school system, it never seems to go as quick as you'd like, but for the most part, I really can't complain on the speed of the process. They were able to get everything approved, checked off, and through, and it really came together quite nicely. And, of course, there's always been some people still that are, like, a little hesitant, but when they saw the student numbers and just the interest that existed innately just there, that really helped prove the fact that this course really needs to be taught and needs to be taught at a university here where there's actually, you know, scientific basis to things that we're saying. We're not just kind of making stuff up. It's science behind it. There's research behind it. And we're bringing in some experts from the field also to give it that much more merit and that much more connection for the students as well.
Matthew, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the university? And how has it affected your planning for what's to come? Because I don't think any of us know exactly what's around the corner as this impacts society.
That's the key.
Right?
It's just the uncertainty is the little bit of the scary part.
100%.
So this was around, you know, really, here we are early May. This is around mid-March was our spring break. And right before spring break was when this whole kind of closure push started kind of happening, and they made the decision over spring break, literally over the student spring break, to say no more face-to-face classes. You're basically shut down from then until the end of the semester at least. So this, you know, rightfully so, took a lot of professors, you know, off guard. You know, how do you all of a sudden just not, quote, come back from spring break and see the students? How do you still convey the content and the knowledge to students? And that's, of course, you know, we've got students traveling all over the country. I had many students that maybe live with parents or elderly people that are more higher risk. So, again, there's risk of transmission that way. So, luckily, my course was very well prepared for that in the sense that I have published actually a lot of the content on YouTube on my channel, Tobacco University. It's a channel on YouTube where a lot of students go through and watch videos of me doing lectures of slides. And the advantage of this is that when they come to class, they would answer group questions, and then allows me time to take them to see the various grow tents that we had available to us. So this COVID-19 kind of pandemic here, this kind of stress on the university system, does make it a little more challenging to deliver content. And what's really made it difficult was we couldn't have the guest lectures come in like we had planned. But luckily, I had pre-recorded some guest lectures from last year, so students were able to watch those. Where the real challenge is trying to find students jobs, because we've had a lot of people that want to come here, talk to the students, and literally offer the opportunity to do internships. It could be very entry-level stuff. It could be mid-level stuff. The sense that this course is that educational component, that educational student body, that education, the educated worker is what they were looking for. So sadly, the uncertainty in general, just economics ways on top of everything else, made it more difficult right now to find these students potential jobs or internships, simply because of the uncertainty factor that people now are being a little bit more hesitant on the amount that they may be planting, the amount that they may be scaling up if they were already kind of growing hemp productions. So that's made it a little bit of just that uncertainty and a little more difficult for the students to kind of jump into the industry, even having taken the course.
We're certainly interested to see kind of what this production season, how it all shakes out, you know, what the acreage impact will be from this. I want to come back to something that you said, Matthew. You said you guys are having a kind of an unusual spring in New England. And, you know, there's a couple different agricultural production styles for hemp, right? There's the horticultural style, which I kind of think is what your course covers. There's then the more traditional row crop style. I'm interested, you know, when students come into your class, are they kind of under this impression, we've heard it a lot, that if you just throw hemp seeds in the ground and they just grow and it's just easy, is it, are people surprised? Are your students surprised by, you know, the challenges of growing hemp, that it's not maybe as easy as they thought it was going to be? And then I want to pair that against, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the great work of Dr. Larry Smart in your neck of the woods over at Cornell. And, you know, kind of some of the research that they've put out. So just interested in your thoughts on the challenges of growing hemp and how your students respond.
Yeah, so, I mean, everyone says, oh, it's called weed for a reason because it grows like a weed. And I always show them kind of in the grow tent, too. With what I like about the grow tent is I can manipulate things very easily. And I can show them how little changes can make a vastly different negative effect. And when you see it grow nice, well, green, and it looks easy in the greenhouse, well, you think that's just how it grows. So giving them that sense of the science behind growing hemp is, I think, surprising to a lot of students on the complexities. I harp on, you know, and I do indoor growing. I show, you know, grow tents. I also do, like, greenhouse growing. I talk about high tunnel growing. And I do talk about field growing and kind of comparing the fact on those. We talk about soils and the importance of pH with soils and the fact that it isn't just you put a seed in the ground and it grows. You know, out our way, too, a lot of corn is grown. Well, it looks pretty easy when you see on a large scale a bunch of tall green plants and all nice rows, and that's what the picture shows, and it's pretty easy driving down the highway. But really getting them that appreciation for the challenges of what the weather brings. Like this year being very cold, very cold start, being for 30 degrees Fahrenheit for a low, you know, I mean, getting to that near frosty, frozen conditions, what that does to soil temperature, how temperature affects things. So it's very challenging year to year, and that's true for, you know, the hemp growers as well as now with the potential or the fear of food shortages, you know, looking at people starting their own gardens, which is, I think, something that's going to be great to come out of this. You know, you've got to look at the positive side. I think that while it's very easy to start seeds and start plants, I think people are going to find out pretty quickly, you know, what a challenge it is to actually get that plant to harvest, whether even if it is a tomato plant, all the things that go into it.
Sure.
Of course, large-scale hemp, the one thing is growing it, and that can be a whole set of challenges in its own regards. But then the harvesting process, you know, how do you go about in the field and harvest it? And then, okay, if you do get it out of the field, how do you go about extracting it? And scale? What volume are you looking at? You know, what are you looking for extraction? So there's a lot of different components. It's not just pick the tomato off the plant and go eat it. It's a whole nother, the drying down. And I did talk about the drying down thing. Are you going for the buds? Are you going just for extraction? How are you going to extract? We have people talk about, you know, that do extractions, that go through and do testing, looking for pesticide residues and everything like that. So it is quite the challenge. You know, it looks nice on a picture, and that's why my next level or my upper level or trying to integrate, you know, where do you take the course from here, is try to get some of those actual grower experiences and some of the challenges that they face so students can get that much more of an appreciation for what it does take to grow. We had our grow tent get moved because in the building halfway through the semester, and it was a very hot room, but because of some rooms in the building, it had to get moved, so we had to move it to a room that was in the basement just for a short period of time, but it didn't have a good temperature regulation in that particular room. I found out after the fact, and how quickly the plants started showing signs of stress and degradation and yellowing, and it was amazing to see the students. They're like, we just moved those plants last week, and here we see them a week later, how quick they started to look so bad. So I think that was what was a little frustrating from my standpoint, to kind of see the plants start to die so quickly. It gave that connection for the students of like, wow, if you mess up even a little bit, it can really have a negative effect in the long range. Well, I think that was kind of an important learning experience.
No, that's let it grow, as they say, right? And the great pride that you have when you see one of your students taking a great interest in it and sort of charting a path for either a career or a job or just, you know, learning more about the industry is terrific. You know, before we wrap up, I wanted to just talk a little bit about technology that affects cultivation and some interesting things that we're seeing adapted this year involve drone technology for industrial hemp fields. And we're talking about spreading seeds, spraying nutrients, spraying fertilizers, and, you know, all kinds of things that you would need to, you know, far better than I, what you would apply. But it enables you to service a dense field without going to the expense of having some sort of inefficient overhead sprayer. And it's precision because you can capture data from the field. I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but as I see those things out there, it's really exciting. What do you see about the use of drone technology? Or I've even seen the drones that go on the indoor greenhouses with the wheels that look like, you know, Tonka trucks from back in the day. What do you see there? What kind of interesting things should we look for?
I think kind of going forward, you're looking at technologies, particularly for drones, in the sense of evaluating fields and being able to make precise applications. And again, whether that's pesticide, whether that's fertilizer, whether that's a nutrient assessment, being done a lot with other crops, good, so we have some more data on them, sending a drone up, taking literally a picture, high-resolution picture, and determining the green or yellow coloration can tell you, a farmer, a grower, a lot about the differences within a field. Well, they can overlay that with then the soil report and determine, hey, you know, if I'm dragging a tractor down through, but when I'm doing a field prep, I need to fertilize this area a little bit more than this area. So it may be the same, let's say, 1,000 pounds to the acre of fertilizer, but it might be an uneven application to make all areas of the field consistent. And that's one important part about technology, is kind of being more precise because you're able to have a less environmental contamination potential, being more cost-effective because you're applying what the plant needs, and this is all possible through technology, and it really comes through being able to use any technology effectively. It comes through a knowledge of the plant, knowledge of the ecosystem, and knowledge of the soil, particularly for outdoor growing, in the sense that if you don't know what the plant needs, what you have to add to the plant, you're going to have issues, and you're not going to be able to use the technology yourself very well. So I see a lot of promise coming with that. As we get larger and larger scale, I always tell in the course, it's got to be scalable. Just because you see it in a 4x2 tent, everything I show you is scalable to, you know, 4 acres by 2 acres if you wanted, to try to give that idea that if this is going to become a large-scale thing, it's going to have to be able to be able to be grown on a large scale, and you can't over-fertilize a little bit here, because if it's a teaspoon more per plant, if you multiply that by 1,000 plants, well, that could be a whole host of different.
Well, Matthew, we certainly applaud the work that you are doing to spread knowledge. It's incredibly valuable, especially putting up your lectures on YouTube on DeBacco University. And we talked about how you're offering this class in the summer to beyond just UConn students, but anybody who is interested in this. So we really appreciate everything that you are doing in this space. We thank you for coming on to the Hoban Minute, and we can't wait to have you on again. Keep talking about all this stuff. It's fascinating.
Definitely. If you want me back, I'd be glad to schedule a time, and thank you for allowing me to have this venue to get this information out there, that there is these courses that do exist.
Well, the pleasure was all ours, Matthew. Thank you very much, and we wish you the best of luck, and we will absolutely stay in touch.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. Stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.